Paulette was in the middle of a sentence when, blam, we disappeared.
Was it only 30 seconds instead of a minute?
Huh. I think it only gave us 30 seconds. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think I actually clicked close rooms. Well, no, but I usually, even when I do that, it's your time.
Close rooms gives you the 1 minute, doesn't it? Yeah. I feel like we had our minute.
Oh, well, welcome everybody to our last meeting of 2020. Wow, nice to see all of you. I'll go around and say hello, starting with John and Joan, Jinryu, Amanda, Pat, Shoketsu, Mark W, Bob K, Jim, Paulette, Marv, Tyler, Sam, Mary, Andy, Soon, Bill, Candace, Marcia, and Amelia. All right. Well, welcome everyone. So in terms of announcements, like I said, we're going on holiday break, and that means we won't meet Tuesday or next Sunday or the following Tuesday, the Tuesday that's in between Christmas and New Year's. But then we will start up right after the first. We will have our Saturday practice and on the second, I believe, and then starting right on Sunday. And then we'll go all year. So let me just turn up my light here. So yesterday we had a term student retreat, and we, at a closing retreat, we tell the story of our term, our previous 3 months. And I was thinking about how, even though in Buddhist practice, our job is to see through, let go of our stories in the sense of recognizing that they're not inherently true or real, but on the other hand, that we are creatures of story. That is how we structure our minds and our lives and understand things and digest things. And just thinking of, you know, the whole idea of like there being a year, like there's 2020, and as of January 1st, we're in some kind of different zone. Like it's totally arbitrary, right? There's no real such thing. And yet, the utility of being able to say, all right, there's 2020, let's move on, has a certain utility to it. So I was appreciating yesterday being able to reflect on the term, tell the story about the term, tell the story about 2020, and then kind of open up to something new. So all right, so today's talk, I'm calling Ebb and Flow in Practice, Cycles of Energy, Inspiration, and Focus. So if you keep up a Buddhist practice for any length of time, you can expect your practice to go through these cycles of ebb and flow in terms of energy, inspiration, and focus. So at times, hopefully, you will experience, you know, learning and growth, a sense of progress, in not in a sense of good versus bad or achieving some particular thing, but in a sense of movement, of flow, of vitality, liveliness, that there will be periods where you feel like you have some, you know, you got some momentum going. You're going pretty good. You're keeping up with your meditation and your reading and whatever it is that you define as your practice. It's going pretty well. And then inevitably, there will be times where we feel less motivated, dull or aimless, or falling back into old habits. And I'm mentioning this in particular because I've heard from quite a few people that the last year has been hard, the last few months has been hard, and particularly in the sense of keeping up some kind of momentum or thread of practice, of purpose. For many of us, our lives are, the structures that we're used to aren't there. Like I just do not exercise unless I've signed up for an exercise class. And I was going to Orange Theory Fitness, and when COVID hit, I stopped, and I just stopped exercising, right? So many of the structures that we relied on to kind of give our lives, keep up our healthy habits, keep progressing and learning and growing have been changed or taken away. There's been a lot of turmoil and whatever over the last year. With racial injustice, unrest and political craziness and COVID and global heating and all kinds of stuff. So it's been quite a turbulent year. And I also mention it because usually I realize the holiday season for many of us isn't going to be quite like it usually is, but going into the holidays is another time I associate with a little bit of an ebb in practice. Usually I'm with family, and when you're around, it's hard to keep to your healthy routines as much when family is around. You're trying to adapt, and or some of us are just going to take time off, and it's hard to keep up the discipline. So because of that, I thought this was a timely topic. So I think what's important is that when we experience an ebb in practice, when the energy and the enthusiasm, the inspiration, the clarity, the focus is kind of at a low level, that we recognize this as part of a natural cycle, and that we don't give up practice at that point, that we keep our practice alive through that time, and trust that there will be a time of flow and regeneration after that. So let's see. So I just want to talk a little bit about those times of ebb, which can be caused by external circumstances, like I was talking about. Sometimes it's caused by our own health issues. If we have emotional or physical challenges, that can take a lot of our energy and shift things around. And then sometimes when we've experienced this time of ebb, for some people's karma, the only way we know how to get a healthy habit going again is to get involved in a karmic struggle with ourselves, is to, put our minds on self-discipline. All right, this is what I'm going to do. And then when we fail to do that, we feel bad and beat ourselves up, and that can just end up being this kind of negative struggle that goes nowhere and can actually make us averse to practice, right? If trying to do practice means I'm going to get involved in all that, then never mind, right? So sometimes people turn away from practice for that. Sometimes people just get discouraged, decide it's not really for them after all. I tried this Buddhism thing. I was really into it for a while, but I don't know. So we have so many options today, right? Almost none of us are doing this practice, which traditionally we'd be doing this because our family did it and our society and culture expected us to do it. But most of us are not, right? Most of us are, even if we were raised Buddhist, we have the option of doing something else. And many of us were not raised Buddhist, and we just chose this. So we could choose something else too, right? We could just go to the bookstore and pick something else off the shelf and see what would work. So it can be, when we feel these times of ebb, we may just figure that we're not up to it, right? Other people are up to it, but it's just too tough for me. I don't have the self-discipline for that. And this can be, times of ebb can be kind of distressing or sad or painful as well, especially if we've had a really profound experience of practice and the Dharma in the past. If it really has made a difference in our lives, it really did help us get through times or create new habits or, you know, restructure our lives, or if we had some really profound insights that seemed like they were going to be permanently transformative, but then they kind of fade away. Remembering that time when you were so enthused and reading and listening to podcasts, deeply inspired, mindful throughout the day, regularly attending Sangha, contemplating profound spiritual issues, working intensively on your karma with the precepts. I think what's funny, I don't experience this so much, I guess, because we're a little spread out here, but one of the things that is common is if I encounter Sangha members or people who have practiced with the Sangha out in public, and you know, good chances, like, I haven't seen them around practice lately. I mean, there's a lot of people who cycle through, you know, and they come a little bit and then they drift away, and Kyogen called that an orbit. You know, sometimes some people have wider orbits than others, but they kind of come back around. But people are often apologetic when they see me. They're like, "Oh, hi." you know, cuz I kind of reminded of, like, "Oh, I haven't been around cuz And I always want to be like, "Doesn't matter. I don't mind. That's okay." But now we're somehow lacking the motivation, or we do the practice perhaps, but kind of half-heartedly, or without feeling the rewards or satisfaction we've come to expect or at least hope for. So a time of ebb, maybe a day or a week or a month or a year or decades. And sometimes, you know, just like tides, the ebb may be just like, it's a little less energetic than I'd like it to be. And sometimes it's really low, right? Sometimes we've really lost touch and lost our habits. So in the times of ebb, it may be tempting to make practice a lower priority in our lives or to drift away from it entirely. And I'm talking to people who did show up today, so you know, you're still showing up, which is great. But I'm going to record this as a podcast as well, so it'll get a wider audience. So I want to argue today that if you have ever felt deeply inspired by the Dharma, if meditation or practice has ever brought you positive results, then there's something valuable in it for you. Even if that time of that really fruitful time seems like it's in the past. So it's worth keeping up our practice through the times of ebb, because they won't last forever, and we won't get to experience the flow and the liveliness and the rewards and the intimacy again if we just give up the thread of practice. Whatever you responded positively to in the Dharma is still there in within you. So there are skillful ways to keep up our effort through times of ebb. Keep, just to mix metaphors, right? So the cycle of ebb and flow is practice with more energy or less energy. And another metaphor is keeping your practice alive is like keeping the ember glowing so that you can, the fire can come back. So the first step I would say is to recognize a time of ebb for what it is, part of a cycle within our long-term practice. So you can actually turn toward your feelings of dissatisfaction, a sense of disappointment or dis-ease or feeling a little guilty or something like that. You can actually turn toward that dissatisfaction as our first piece of information that we're in a time of ebb, and we can actually use that dissatisfaction to motivate us to move through it. I noticed when I do go back to Minnesota for Christmas and I spend a couple weeks just like, I don't know, doing visiting and sleeping in and eating too much and whatever, that by the end of that time, I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. So there's a kind of natural dissatisfaction that can arise in us if we pay attention to it. It can actually be helpful. So recognizing, all right, I'm in a time of ebb. Okay. Unfortunately, this does not mean we're a failure. It doesn't mean that we don't care about practice. It doesn't mean that we chose the wrong spiritual practice, or that our past enthusiasm for Buddhism was just an infatuation or, you know, a fluke. And it doesn't mean that in order to practice, in order to keep practicing, we have to get embroiled in that whole karmic thing about self-discipline and guilt. A time of ebb is just what it is. And our choices may have contributed to it. And so we may learn something by examining, you know, how did I get here? But there's no point in dwelling on blame. Here we are. So recognizing an ebb as part of a cycle can be encouraging. That means there will be a time of flow, time of inspiration, clarity, renewal, energy, intimacy, insight, ease, a sense of growth and learning. So then, once we've recognized our practice is at a low ebb, we may need to form the intention to keep it alive, even though our sense of motivation and inspiration may be lacking. And this can be challenging, like making yourself exercise when you've fallen out of the habit. Sometimes there's just no way around, just like, yeah, I don't feel like doing this. I don't want to do this, but I'm just going to do it. So the practice we do does need to be as wholehearted as we can make it. I mean, we may not be able to summon much, but we've got to try and try to make the effort to be wholehearted if we can. Because even though I've really come to trust this cycle of like, I don't know, what's up with my practice? It just feels kind of dull or stuck or something. And I know that if I just stick with it and stay with it, that you know, things will change. But you can't just trust that if you just set aside practice entirely, that at some point you're going to feel inspired to do it again. That's different. Our habits of body, mind, and heart are too strong. So if we just set aside practice, we'll just kind of get sucked back into that forgetfulness. So this is one of the functions of vow. Whether it's something on one end of the spectrum is just kind of an internal intention, internal private intention, all the way up to a public vow. Because we've said, I want to go in this direction. And then when we don't feel like going in that direction anymore, or we've lost our sense of direction, there's our vow remaining, you know, pointing us where we intended to go at some point. And at some point we would be like, I don't even know if I want to go in this direction anymore. But if we stick with the vow, then when we wake up again, we're glad that we didn't like wander off the road, right? So, you know, my personal story of this was, you know, I was in the middle of my monastic practice, probably in the early 2000s, and I don't know, it was just went into a very bleak place, and it didn't feel like I was making the progress I wanted to make, and it just ended up feeling kind of like one foot in front of the other, and not very rewarding or enjoyable. I didn't know whether this was going to be successful or not, and so there was a real point at which the only I completely lacked inspiration and motivation. I was just inhabiting this form that I had given myself. I was in a community, you're supposed to wake up at this time and go and sit, and then you're supposed to do this. And I vowed to follow the precepts, so I'll follow the precepts. And I feel like that structure is what really allowed me to, in a sense, kind of come apart, but then coalesce back without losing it, right? So for that period of time, vow is the only thing that kept me going. And the good thing is, the longer that you keep this up, the more cycles of ebb and flow you experience, the stronger your faith will be that when there's a period of dryness, that it will be followed by a time of flow. That, you know, you don't need to worry about it, freak out about it, totally, you know, beat yourself up or radically change your life. It's just, okay. So how do we keep our practices alive? How do we keep that little ember burning? So I would say to set realistic expectations. So really, and I think what's best is just to say, what would it be really easy to do, easy to keep up? And then maybe just, you know, set your aspiration just a tad higher than that. So it's just pushing yourself a little bit. So, you know, sometimes this means just, all right, you know, I feel like I should sit 5 days a week. Okay, can you sit once a week? Yeah, I can do once a week. So like pick the like, yeah, sounds easy. And then maybe push yourself just a little, built in something like that. So I would say with all of that, regular zazen. So this means regularity is more important than quantity, and regularity is also more important than quality. Like a lot of times, sometimes, you know, when things are tough, sometimes we go, you know, my zazen's been that. And then we don't want to do it because it's not pleasant or it's not rewarding or we don't think it's, you know, helping. But this is just, in a way, like I'm saying, this is just because we're in a time of ebb, and that if we have to keep that habit going, that placeholder there at least. So we sit, you know, as often as you can, but regularity is better than quantity. So if you can only sit 20 minutes one day a week, okay. If you can sit 5 minutes 3 days a week, or so, I mean, that, and some of you have heard this story before, but during a really busy time in my life when I didn't have a lot of structure built in, this was after I was in residential training, I made a habit of my husband would go to bed first, and I was brushing my teeth, and I put the lid down on the toilet, and I sat on top, and just, I meditated, I did zazen for 5 minutes. Because, like, I mean, you have 5 minutes, come on. No matter how busy your day is, you have 5 minutes. And that made a difference. Just, you know, it's just a little bit at the end of the day, just to, oh yeah, this zazen thing, oh yeah, this different way of being, this different way of relating to life. So keeping up some kind of zazen and not judging it. I mean, there's times, right? There's times for building up your, trying to deepen it and all that kind of stuff. But at the very least, you just keep it going. And then I would say participation with Sangha. Again, some, so there's some regularity. Maybe you feel like you should go every week, but can you go once a month? I mean, it's, so there's still some contact, some being around other people just makes a huge difference. Then the third, I would say keeping the precepts. So this is what we do, not just for ourselves, but for other beings. So if nothing else, even if you're not sitting zazen and you're not coming to Sangha, if that you're still keeping a thread of practice going, if you're trying to keep the precepts. And that's all that you really know to be true. That's at one point, again, in that low point in my practice, I was thinking, I don't really know what's true. I don't know if I believe in anything. I don't know if I believe in this stuff and this awakening and whatever. But I knew the precepts were true. I knew that if you broke the precepts, bad stuff happened. People got hurt. I got hurt. So that's all I knew, right? It's like touch a stove, you burn yourself. Touch a stove when it's on, you burn yourself. Okay, that's pretty simple. And then I guess the fourth, which is a little more subtle, is just, I guess, just living deliberately and keeping that intention to pay attention to your life and trying to hold on to that faith that doing so can make a difference, that we have some choice about our lives and our behavior and the way that we perceive things. So that's about just like keeping that ember burnt, you know, keeping it glowing so that we have a practice to revive when we have the energy and time or whatever to do so. But then, you know, ways to maybe get that flame going again, invite that tide back in. I think it's really important to refuse to fall into self-blame or discouragement. That is the opposite of inspiration. And I mean, our practice is by choice, no matter what. This is our choice. So as Schopenhauer said, man can do as he wills, but he cannot will what he wills. So when we don't want to practice, it's awfully hard to make ourselves practice. You can't really fight with yourself, right? Yourself is as strong as yourself. But Buddhism is all about the things that we can do to influence our own bodies and minds, kind of indirectly, if you will. So it's not a direct struggle of wills, but there are things that we can choose to do that will affect what we want to happen. So things that have worked for me is study, you know, just following your nose and picking up some Dharma, or listening to a podcast or something that just inspires, it just reminds you of why it is that you do love practice. And retreat, maybe this isn't for everybody, but I definitely find that taking a day or a week or whatever I can, and to some extent even zazen is this, right? But this is more extended usually, to just set everything aside, go into stillness and spaciousness, and then the shift in perspective can happen that allows us to reconnect with the Dharma. There's reminding ourselves of impermanence. So many of you will know this ancient Zen gata that is often written on monastery instruments and chanted. And it's, let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Awaken, take heed, do not squander your life.
So you gotta, you gotta read it to us the way they do in the monasteries. It'll shake you to the core.
All right. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Awaken, take heed. Do not squander your life. That's like the ending play at Zen Mountain Monastery with that. It always was like, ugh. I think I'm going to sit up later and sit zazen. But I always did picture somebody like sneaking around outside your house and like singing that through your window some night. So then there's also, of course, the even older five remembrances from the Pali Canon, where the Buddha said there are five facts which one should reflect on often. Whether one is a woman or a man, lay or ordained, which five? I am subject to aging and have not gone beyond aging. I am subject to illness and have not gone beyond illness. I am subject to death and have not gone beyond death. I will grow different, separate from all that is dear and appealing to me. I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and have my actions as my arbitrator. Whatever I do for good or for evil, that will to that will I fall heir. So, if you're depressed, I don't recommend dwelling on the five remembrances, but you know, they can be a medicine sometime. And then I guess also in terms of what we can do to re-inspire ourselves.
I'm sorry to interrupt again, but we lost a little bit of your sound.
Oh no, that's, people have mentioned that.
We can hear you, but it's a little more faint.
Is that the same thing that happened earlier when people were talking about losing sound?
Your sound is fine. I think they were just weren't paying attention.
Okay, here.
Yeah, it didn't seem all bad to me. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a bandwidth thing, maybe. I don't know.
But did it happen to anybody else besides Jinryu?
No, your sound is fine.
I don't know, Jinryu, it might be on your end.
Oops.
It's so hard to know.
It is. It's very,
Actually, Domio, it was after you coughed. It was fine up to that. After you coughed, the audio volume backed off considerably.
That makes sense.
It's good now.
As long as it makes sense, right? Okay, so then... The other thing that I recommend, which is a little more subtle, is asking ourselves what we truly, truly want. So I guess I recommend examining this, you know, in meditation or reflection or something. What is it you most want in this life? And I don't think what I'm saying includes like, I really want to go to Costa Rica or things like that. I mean, although that might be a manifestation of something that you really want, but at a deeper level, what is it that you really want? And I asked myself that today. I've been writing about this, and so during Zazen, and I did that because I noticed, to confess, my Zazen has been very scattered and unfocused for months. It's been frustrating. I just sit there and think about projects. I can't keep my mind from just, so I was asking myself, like, what is it that I truly want? And I guess for me, this can be a shifting answer in a way, but what I most want is to do my utmost, to do everything I possibly can to preserve life on Earth. Whatever, if I could give my life energy and just save the monarch butterflies, if I could just whatever small portion of nature and humanity, of life, that I can try to influence our society and preserve, that is what really most deeply moves and motivates me. So that for me is one of the reasons it's very hard to sit Zazen and put everything aside, because if what I most care about is trying to save the world, right, then I'm thinking about saving the world. So what's helpful is, especially, you know, if you've built up some experience and faith and practice, that when I saw that, okay, oh, well, that's, at least right now, that resonates as what I care about the most. I know that truly sitting, truly connecting with the Dharma will only help me do that. It will be in service to what I truly care about. And I think that's probably what most of us would find. If what matters the most to you is embodying love and support for the people in your life, then chances are, if you really examine your experience, you realize that really devoting yourself to your practice and sitting will only augment your ability to do that, will only let you do that more sincerely, authentically, uninhibitedly, deeply. So I feel like it's kind of a clever way to get yourself to practice, is to, like, what do you really want? And then kind of see how the Dharma actually serves that. And then I guess I would say whatever works to, like, you know, it's just this, that's the beauty of the Dharma in a way. It's like, okay, you have this ember, you're trying to light the fire again. I don't know. Does metta practice work? Does singing work? Does hiking work? I don't know. Whatever helps you reconnect. So just go ahead and try it. So just in closing, I guess the take-home message is, if you are in a time of ebb, or you experience one inevitably at some point, just keep up those basics regardless of how it feels. Just, you know, keep some basic thread of Zazen, some contact with Sangha if you can. You know, just keep enough so that ember keeps glowing, and you have something to come back to. And also, I guess I would say, it helps ahead of time if we don't get overly self-identified or congratulatory about the times when our practice is going really well. Because then if we have a sense of, like, yes, I'm so with it, then we'll be more likely to blame ourselves or feel inadequate or frustrated or something when there is a time of ebb, which there just inevitably is. No matter how deep our you know, spiritual realizations, no matter how long we've been practicing, there's going to be these times. It's just like a natural cycle. So So I guess in that sense, during the times of ebb, we want to practice the paramita that we've been discussing recently, kshanti, or patience, or endurance. And then during times of flow, I suggest gratitude. I happen to feel inspired. I happen to feel energetic right now. I happen to feel like, you know, I've got some habits with real momentum. So I'll leave it there. We have time for discussion and questions and comments. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you have something to say, and or, you know, indicate in the chat that you want to say something if you don't want to just jump in. Mm-hmm. So on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, discussed at Dharmarain over the years about how people tend to get reinvigorated with their practice naturally with the seasons, and that, you know, as summertime, people go out, they're doing things, or maybe they're vacationing, and then it starts getting darker and colder, and people start turning inward. But and I've definitely noticed that, you know, but this year was different. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you've noticed that too with your students or practitioners, if, you know, this year just being so out of whack that it's kind of thrown that seasonal change off.
I feel like that was, I mean, I shouldn't speak for all of the term students, because there were a few it sounded like, because I don't know, some people just, you know, they can decide they're going to do something and do it. I've always just been so amazed and envious of that kind of character. But I think it seemed like kind of a shock for many of the term students, who I think were kind of anticipating that, like, all right, it's fall, you know, let's turn inward and focus on practice. And then it just kind of didn't come together. It was like, it was still strangely unfocused in many ways. So yeah, I think that was, things are weird right now.
You spoke a little bit about making your vows like accomplishable, that's not the word, the things that you can accomplish, and then maybe, like, you know, a little bit more to kind of give you the little push. And I'm just curious if you, because I just happened, I think it was last night, literally, I was reading the second half of the Norman Fisher chapter for our book group, and he talks about the importance of, like, how, like, the gigantic, like, the completely unachievable vows are something that motivate us to keep moving, which I found really interesting, because I've always been the, like, okay, like, let's make something achievable so I can achieve it and feel good that I did it. But then, yeah, I was curious if you had any thoughts on the Bodhisattva vows that are completely unachievable as a goal of keeping us going.
Shohaku Okumura has a really great section on this in his book Living by Vow, and he talks about the Bodhisattva vows and how they're you save every living being, right? And all delusions, what they're just, and he pointed out how that is, it's good that they're not quantifiable. Because when, I mean, sometimes it's beneficial to make a vow that's quantifiable, right? I'm going to say it once a week, and then you know whether you've completed it or not. But then you also can be setting yourself up for failure, perhaps, if you don't achieve that. So it's like a totally different kind of vow when it's just, I'm going to save every living being. So, you know, in that sense, those great vows are, don't deliberately have any numbers attached to them or specific numbers. So that they're, and I guess, yeah, so there's many different kinds of vows, and that I think those really specific ones can kind of keep us, give us some structure on a daily basis, because, you know, what kind of And the Bodhisattva vow, like, because it's between, I haven't achieved it at all to like complete perfection, you know, how do you build in some growth into that? Are you trying to say something, Tyler?
No, just my child came in and started asking questions while you're, so it's just like, one second, it's all good. I was just giving with it. No, that's wonderful.
and yet those, without that perspective though, with the greater intention and the greater vows, the little vows would just seem, I don't know, they wouldn't be very inspiring. Hello. Other thoughts or comments?
So Owen, your description of the seasonality of ebb and flow reminded me of how like the first monks and nuns would stay in place when the monsoon rains came, so they wouldn't step on little critters that lived in the mud. And I don't know, it was a nice reminder that ebb and flow is sort of something that's like age old. Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be, maybe that's part of, just occurred to me actually, maybe that's part of why so many of us are kind of struggling right now, because there's like no ebb and flow. It's the same shit all the time. It's like it's not like you went through your Thanksgiving thing and now you're going to go do your holiday thing, or you did your fall. It's been all kind of the same. And it's difficult to keep that up without some kind of, because they, you know, traditionally it's like you do, you know, three intensive months and in the monastery, and then you do, and even within then, there's like once a month you do a 1 week really intensive session, retreat. And then, but then you come out of retreat. And you have a break. So, yeah.
Tomio, I really appreciate you talking about your practice, because, I mean, I know for me, I've been struggling, and just to hear you, someone who's been practicing for such a long time, to have some of the same, not quite exactly the same, but, you know, some of the same frustrations is really refreshing. And, you know, I really appreciated that you talked about like sitting on the toilet seat and like taking 5 minutes. Cause I mean, that's what I learned from my little participation in the Seishin or the Ruhatsu, was to get it in when you can and kind of make it a daily part of your life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I appreciated that. Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, it's always a toss-up, right? It's like, is it discouraging to find out that I've practiced for 25 years and I still have a few months where my zazen's unfocused? I mean, maybe for some people, right? But they're probably not part of this sangha. So,
I don't think it's discouraging. I think it's honest.
Well, and I think the danger of a teacher or a senior practitioner allowing the projections, like staying silent about their own struggles, and then we look up at them and think, well, somehow they figured it out and they don't have any struggles, so then we might feel really different from them. This is a remarkable person who was able to do some remarkable thing, not like me. When like it feels like the whole point is to help people see how they can do it, right?
I think even the Dalai Lama says that, you know, he has the same thoughts that other people have. Mm. He just doesn't act on them. And that's what makes the difference between, you know, a skilled mind and an unskilled mind, is, you know, not acting on negative behaviors or impulses.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just in terms of the last few months particularly, and I think it was fine, like someone was like, I was fine with you know, the last spring, and I was fine with the summer. But then it was a fall. I kind of figured, all right, now, you know, now it'll, like, practice will heat up again, and to have it kind of continue to be unfocused is, yeah. So I found that, you know, the part of the reason that I was thinking about this topic was because, you know, at the term student retreat yesterday, we draw little mandalas that represent our term, like with crayons and markers and really crude, just pictorial representations of our terms and what happened and whatever. And as I did that, I realized, like, you know, essentially I just said what I just told you guys, right? I've just been kind of unfocused, and it feels like everything's on cruise control. Song is fine. We're continuing, but it's like, there's nothing particularly like we're growing or trying or doing or innovating or anything like that. We're just kind of on cruise control. And, but being able in a way to look at that and like, all right, that is my story. That is my story of ebb. And almost as soon as I looked at it that way, you know, other things are starting to shift and open up. It's like, all right, what am I going to do in the new year? You know, the conditions aren't necessarily going to change instantly in the new year. How might my practice change in order to, you know, liven up this fire even in these conditions? I mean, these conditions aren't that bad, right? We could be in the midst of war. The pandemic could be much more deadly. There's all kinds of things that could be much worse. So come on. We could find a way to practice in this. So I feel some kind of motivation and interest and energy starting to come back, which is very like, there it is. There it is. Now I can imagine.
I hope a lot of you. Oh, go ahead.
A similar analogy that along the lines of ebb and flow that works for me is kind of like the mountain passage of a pit. Sometimes it's uphill, sometimes it's downhill, but lately it just seems like this being on the plateau. Mm. The plateau is enormous and it's formless, and a fog is rolled in. And no matter which way you look, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like being directionless. And it's sometimes when you're in that situation, sometimes the best choice is to sit down and wait for the fog to lift.
Just try something different. No way, sometimes. You gonna say something, Bob? Oh.
Okay.
You said something earlier. No obligation.
I hope a lot of you have had a chance to practice with Kodo.
I don't think we know who Kodo is.
Oh, darn. Kodo is one of the lay teachers at Great Vow. And she's, an important teacher in Heart of Wisdom. But anyway, she asked me how I was doing the other night. And I said, yeah, I think I'm making progress. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I've gone from expecting a peak experience every time I sit down to every other time. And she said, whoa, wait a minute, Bob, that's going in the wrong direction, because you have a peak experience every time. Hmm. Just not seeing it. Hmm. Yeah, so I thought, well, that's a good thing to perspective to have.
Other thoughts and observations?
I just want to say I don't quite get it, but that's okay. I'm comfortable with not understanding that.
What Bob just said?
Yeah. I don't know, just the idea of having an experience you don't notice sort of baffles me. I don't know, the idea that isn't an experience by definition something we observe, like our observing it is what makes it an experience. I don't know, I could be wrong. I'm just, it's a little confusing.
That is a very, very good question. And believe me, I have spent long hours during retreat contemplating that very question. You know, what is the nature of experience? And we want, it's natural, right? We want some kind of conscious experience. I mean, what the heck else are we? If somebody just tells you, well, you know, unconsciously, you're having a great time. Well, that doesn't, thanks, I don't care, you know, I don't care. But I guess it's like, it feels like to me, like a difference in perspective, which is what, you know, I think in retreat, we're more likely with all that time and energy to be able to open up to a bigger perspective. But all retreat does is show you what's possible. So it's not that you have to do retreat in order to access this thing. It's just when we set aside our habitual ways of thinking, we're able to open up to this perspective. So theoretically, we can open up to it at any time. And when we open up to this perspective, it's not just one perspective, or maybe it's dropping views is actually what it is, right? It's more a direct experience. And then it's like you see your life and you see the past and the future, not in a supernatural way, but just in more of a, you don't see a separation between, like, it's all just, not just a narrative line. It's more of a vast sense of boundlessness about life. And when you see it from that perspective, you see that all along, even though maybe your view felt very small, that all along you were there. So it's almost like when you see that from that perspective, it transforms all that has come as well, and all that will come, because you see in what way it is precious and complete. So I'm guessing that's what Kodo meant, is that every time we sit, it's precious and complete. Sometimes we're conscious of it and sometimes we're not. But we aim to be conscious of it. All right, any last things before we wrap it up for the year?
I just have one tiny last thing that might make people feel better if they're feeling down, and that is after tomorrow, the days start getting longer.
That's true.
And the light and weather and food and all these kinds of things really affect, you know, we like to think that we have this, like, I have an executive eye in here who's going to decide how my practice should be, and I'll, you know, set a goal for myself and I'll fire my practice back up and all this. But that's not really how our lives work, right? We have competing desires and interests and we're affected by everything around us. And so, I mean, one of my favorite, because I've struggled a lot with sleepiness and zazen. And I, you know, depends on the Dharma teacher you go to, right? There's going to be some who are just like, you know, wake up, you die on the cushion right now. Life is brief, you know, waken here and now. But I kind of like the Entaiji lineage, where Uchiyama Roshi led sessions without toys. And when people would come to him and say, oh no, I'm struggling with sleepiness and zazen, he'd be like, well, you can't sleep the whole time. Sometimes it's humidity. Tomorrow, wake up, just feel different for some reason. a lot of it we're not in control of, so we can just settle in for the ride. All right. Abiding in this ephemeral world, like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you all. Have a lovely holiday.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy solstice.
Happy solstice.
Merry Yule.
Thank you.
Yeah.
See you next year.
Yes, happy new year.
Maybe.
And happy solstice.
That's right.
Solstice.
And if you get it, hopefully we'll get a break from the clouds and see the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction.
That's right. Ooh. That's right.
That would be neat. Okay.
And what day is that? I can't remember.
That's tomorrow night, I believe. So mm-hmm.
Hopefully probably rainy.
Probably. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. Good.